Welcome to the Babblery, conversations with fascinating people about what fascinates them. This is Suki Wessling, and today's interview was recorded for an article published in Growing Up in Santa Cruz in March 2022. The interview was recorded February 8th. All right, I am here talking to Jen Ra'anan for Growing Up in Santa Cruz, and we'll be talking for our Moms Who Make a Difference series and talking about moms who are out in the community working to make our community a better place, but also being moms and having to juggle all of that. So welcome, Jen.
Thank you.
It's nice to talk to you, and I'm eager to find out what it's like, because Jen, for you, those of you listening, is the principal of Delta Charter High School. And so it's not a stress-free job, I'm guessing.
No, it's not.
So why don't you describe your school just a little bit so we get a sense of what you do when you're out during the day?
Sure. We're a small free public charter on the Cabrillo campus. We've been operating for 27 years, and we serve students who just haven't had a great experience in traditional schools, either because they have learning differences or learning struggles, or they really want to accelerate their learning and don't have opportunities. So we serve a pretty wide spectrum of students. We're 120 kids, and we're 15 mighty staff members. So we're a pretty small skeleton crew.
Uh-huh. And one of the things that you mentioned was that your school has a particular challenge when there's a COVID surge because of the staffing.
That's correct. Yeah. If we're out three teachers, we have to close our doors. So we've been really careful and really fortunate to not have that happen at any point since the COVID saga began. So we're grateful for that. And, you know, everybody's been really healthy and we've been really lucky.
Uh-huh. And how long have you been principal?
This is my second year.
Uh-huh. And what did you do before that?
I was the dean of students here at Delta for 3 years. And before that, I was a professional development coordinator for Monterey Peninsula Unified School District. And then before that, I was a teacher.
So. All right. So where were you in your career when you had your daughter?
Well, I'd actually had to put a pause on teaching because when my husband and I relocated to Santa Cruz, I was 7 months pregnant, and no one will hire you when you're about to have a baby. It's not really, it doesn't really make teaching feasible. So yeah. I ended up having my daughter in October and took that year off while my husband started grad school through San Jose State at Moss Landing Marine Labs. And that was a pause I wasn't expecting, but it was one that was, that we just had to take. And then I went back to teaching right after my daughter was, 9 months after my daughter was born, the next following school year.
Nice. And so what was it like to have that unplanned time with your baby?
It was great. It was also really necessary. She didn't sleep for the first, I would say, 9 months, really. She slept 4 hours in a 24-hour time period.
So that sounds familiar.
So I was pretty exhausted. I don't know if I could have taught. I don't know how I would have taught on that little sleep. So, it was, I'm glad it happened that way. It was lonely because we didn't know anyone here. So I was all alone with a brand new baby who didn't sleep. And that was definitely challenging. And I actually had some sleep deprivation induced depression as a result of that experience. But, we were happy to be here. It's such a beautiful place to raise a child. And I got on Facebook and got on the Facebook moms groups and started asking questions and, just tried to support myself in a new place with a new little being to care for. Uh-huh. And then, we got through it.
Yeah. And that's a lot of what being a parent is, I guess, you know, finding a way to get through it and move on. And so how old is she now?
She's 9.
9 years old. And and listeners can't see this, but you got this really, really happy smile when you said that. What's it like to have a 9-year-old?
It's great. I mean, I adore her. She's just such a stellar person. She's kind and she's a social justice warrior. I picked her up my husband picked her up from her after school program the other day, and a parent was like, "Right on, your kid's been telling everybody not to go to Chick-fil-A because they're anti-gay rights." And I was like, okay, you know, I didn't realize this was a particular cause that was interesting to my daughter, but she's a little bit of a social justice warrior like her mom. And she's just a stellar human being. I adore her. She's a ton of fun. So.
Yeah. And it's a great age. I mean, mm-hmm. just those years can be really fun because it's before the teenage angst comes along.
I know. She tells me that her favorite number is 18 because that's what she wants to be. She wants to be 18. And I'm like, oh, dear God. Pray
well,
for us
speaking,
all.
Speaking of things that we have to get through as parents.
Yeah.
But although, you know, not everyone has difficulty in their teen years, so
that's
so
true.
You never know.
That's true.
You might sail through it. So what is her, does she ever come to work with you, and what is mm-hmm. her feeling about your work life?
Well, she loves coming to Delta. She helps me, you know, she'll help me organize things. She helped me hang my art on my walls this last time around when I pulled everything down. And she likes being here. She likes helping and just being at the school. And she loves coming at, you know, to open house and things like that, where she'll kind of glom onto one of my students and follow them around. And I think she's proud of me. I think she worries about me. You know, sometimes I'm really, really tired, and I think that worries her. But I don't think it generates resentment. It's just more like she has concern for me sometimes that I'm too drained, you know, and wants to rescue me in ways. And she's very caring, and I have to be a bit of a buffer between myself and my exhaustion so that it doesn't over worry her.
Uh huh.
You know, I have to fake it sometimes. I have to really fake it.
Yeah. And for her to react that way, you know, every kid has their reaction to what they notice in parents. And some kids might get angry. Mm-hmm. Some kids might just sort of dissociate themselves. But in her case, the worry, it sounds like that's you're aware of it and managing it. Do you feel like it's...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know, I have to be honest with her at times, and I have to, sometimes she overhears conversations I'm having, and, you know, I do my best to, be transparent about what's going on for me, because she's intuitive enough to know anyway. And I think it's just better to be honest when I'm stressed or scared or worried, or, I mean, you know, at heart, I'm a very big empath, and sometimes this job just really guts me, and she sees that, and I can't really pretend, you know, to any great degree. So it's just a matter of being honest and explaining things, and I find if I can explain things to her plainly, it's better than trying to pretend like it's not there.
Yeah, well, I think that that's something that we hopefully as a culture are finally figuring out, that kids, mm-hmm. if you don't say anything to kids, that's much worse than mm-hmm. finding a way to speak to them in a developmentally appropriate way. You know, you don't want to dump adult cares on your kids, but
right.
on the other hand, she's going to notice, as you said. So if you don't say anything, that can be much worse.
Yeah, if you don't say anything, the kids just make up their own story, and it's usually about them, you know. Oh, I'm, you know, my mom's too tired to play with me, or my mom's not happy with me, or, you know, and I would never want her to feel that way.
Yeah, and that's a good point, that the kids will make up an explanation. Mm-hmm. And often it seems to me that it's an explanation that adults might find rather baffling. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, we have to include them in whatever way we can. And at this time, I'm assuming that you would agree that given your job and given the pandemic, that those sorts of worries have probably increased.
I don't know. It's hard for me to gauge because I started this job in COVID. Mm-hmm. I wonder what it will be like when this subsides, or there's, you know, just less of a concern. I wonder what my job will be like. I haven't known anything else, you know. This position is not just a principalship, it's a superintendentship. So I'm making decisions I never thought I would need to make, that are about people's lives. And the pressure of COVID has definitely been hard. So I look forward to the day when that's different. And I wonder how much better of a leader and parent I will be able to be when I don't have this additional piece to my job that is all about keeping people really alive, you know, keeping our community safe. And that's just, it's a lot of pressure that I'm looking forward to not having someday, but, you know, it might not end. So mm-hmm. I'm not tacking on that expectation anytime soon I'm going to be released from this responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how this pandemic has changed people's jobs and people in education. You know, you, of course, always had some students who had health concerns, or, you know, there was, I remember during the lockdown, how so many people were commenting that, that it was the first month without a school shooting in X number of years. You know, that sort of concern is a little less but of course you're at such a small school, it's less mm-hmm. of a likelihood, but we've got all these added concerns. It's interesting to think about the fact that you started this job and this is your status quo. So
well, it is and it isn't, right? Because the first year we were entirely remote for most of it. And so I was just me and my office manager here in the building, and everyone else was Zooming in from home. And, you know, I actually managed to get a lot done that year that I probably would never have imagined trying to do this year, like redoing our logo and, you know, working on facilities and things like that, that just fall by the wayside when you're a principal because you have so many things that are, you know, right in front of you that need attendance. This year has been an entirely different animal because now we're interacting with kids, you know, in person, and they were essentially feral for a year. And so they're, you know, our ninth graders haven't had a normal school year since the sixth grade, you know.
Wow.
So vastly different experience from last year to this year. And I would imagine that next year will also be vastly different in its own ways, you know. So it's, you have to be adaptable. And you have to set your expectations accordingly, or not at all. If you're really smart, you just don't have expectations. That's hard.
Well, that's certainly a good way to do it. And how did your daughter fare with so when she was had school from home, you were at work.
So. Well, yeah, my husband's organization shut down entirely and everyone was working from home. So he was home with her and I was home, you know, partly here and there, but we don't have enough space in our house for both of us, all three of us to be Zooming and trying to. So it was actually better for me to be here. But he was with her for the whole year that they were online. And then occasionally I also was home too. And she did great. I mean, she didn't love it. But she rose to the occasion and she, you know, was positive and continued to be resilient through the whole thing, and was really grateful to go back to school. And now she's back to like, oh, it's Monday, I don't want to go to school. So it's interesting, you know, she would have killed last year to go to school on a Monday. But yeah, she fared pretty well, but also because we were fortunate enough to have a parent at home with her, you know, and that's not mm-hmm. the case for everyone. And that wasn't easy for a lot of people.
Yeah. And do you feel like her relationship with her dad changed over that time?
No, they've always been close. He's a very hands-on parent. And they've always, if anything, it didn't bring them closer. It probably, you know, created some tension in their relationship mm-hmm. just because he had to be a little bit more of a taskmaster than I think he, you know, is comfortable being. And I think that sometimes stress them out. And so my job on the weekend was to kind of give the two of them some space from each other so that they could function well during the week. So I did a little bit of interference on the weekends and on vacations and things just so he could get some time apart. Uh-huh. But their relationship has always been really, really wonderful.
That's good. And that's, you know, interesting to think about how the pandemic forced parents to change roles. And in your case, you were the teacher in the family, but you did not become the teacher at home, which is the, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who are teachers who had to take on their own kids as well as teaching remotely. And in your case, it was interesting that you didn't have to do that.
Oh yeah. I mean, a lot of my teachers are doing that. And, you know, when the fire hit, we had, you know, 25% of my staff was evacuated at the beginning of distance learning, at the beginning of the school year. So I had I had teachers in hotel rooms trying to teach class and get their own kids online. And it was, I mean, really bananas. And I mean, my empathy extends to all parents and especially teachers, because they have such a full plate in terms of tending to their own children in this time period and also other people's children as well. That's really tough.
Yeah, it is. And as you know, you referred to yourself as an empath and someone, you know, people who get into teaching professions are not generally people who are generally people who are more, I guess, more aware of other people's emotions, more connected. They're people. And, you know, do you think that makes it harder during the pandemic for the very people whose jobs got harder, that because of the kind of people that tend to get into the profession?
Absolutely. I mean, how do you choose between your school children and your own children? How do you make that choice? You know, when you know those, you know, you've got 24 little ones who are relying on you to be energetic and excited, and, you know, and then you've got your own kid at home. I mean, I think that any teacher worth their mettle, and all of them are, in my opinion, worth their mettle at this point, is going to be torn, you know, between how they treat their children and how they treat their students in a situation like this. It has been stunning to me the lack of compassion for teachers that has come through in our community in the last year. I mean, in some cases, there's been a lot of compassion, but there was a point where, you know, people were accusing teachers of jumping to the front of the line to get vaccines and things like that. And I couldn't believe it. I see how hard my staff works and how much they care about their kids and, you know, their students and their own children. And it was a brutal time to have to prioritize your kids and your family all at once.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that things have calmed down on that front? Are people expressing more understanding of what teachers are going through? No.
No. Mm-mm. You know, and I think that what has happened, I mean, like right now, for example, with the surge, if kids are under, I can't remember what the vaccine age is right now off the top of my head, but if kids, little ones aren't vaccinated, then parents have to be home with them if they're exposed or if they're sick. And those parents are teachers, you know, so even if teachers aren't getting sick, their children are home quarantining or, and I haven't seen a lot of empathy extended to our teachers with that in mind. And to me, what that's about is we have a bunch of parents at home who are practically living paycheck to paycheck, and to not be able to open a school, you know, because of too much COVID or whatever, panics teachers or panics parents because they need to go to work, you know, they need to pay the bills. And that pressure then gets shifted over to teachers. You know, why aren't you coming to work? Why aren't you, you know, making this sacrifice? Why aren't you, you know, doing more? And I think as a society, we really need to start looking at the systems and structures that have this sense of urgency around being at work, that are, you know, sort of supporting this desperation that people have to be, you know, to offload their frustration onto teachers, when really it's about not having fair wages, not having cost of living adjustments in our salaries. You know, everybody's freaked out about earning money, and that a lot of that pressure is getting shifted over to teachers, or has in the last 2 years, maybe not so much now, but I think parents are like, come to school and watch my kid so I can go to work. And I get that because, you know, if we're all one step away from losing our homes, you know, we want to get back to normal. And, you know, so do teachers, but they can't shoulder that responsibility alone.
Yeah, no kidding. And
sorry, that was a little bit of a side note.
No, it's not really, because that's part of, you know, part of, I think, what's important to talk about when you talk about the combination of being a parent and having a job out in the community is the fact that you're never completely not a parent or not someone who works. Those are parts of your life that you can't separate, right? So, you know.
Yeah. The former principal of Delta, Angela Meeker, told me once, when you are a principal, you carry it with you everywhere. And she could not be more right about that. It's with me on vacation. It's with me on sick days. It's with me, you know, on weekends. And Delta is with me all hours of the day, especially in my dreams. Sometimes I wake up and I'm like, but I already went to work. I just dreamt for the last 8 hours about being at work. So it's really, you know, it's such an important part of who I am and what I do. And I'm fortunate to have a child and a husband that support me with that. Mm-hmm. I'm really grateful.
Well, that seems like a perfect place to wrap it up and say thank you. It was really interesting to talk to you about this. And before we go, actually, is there something that you feel that that we can move forward with from this pandemic that will improve families, education, something that you hope we've learned and that might be able to apply in the future?
Well, I just think that it's important for all of us to remember that teachers, educators, you know, administrators, they show up every day to fight for our children, and that when we have the opportunity to fight for them, that we do that.
You've been listening to The Babblery. Please visit www.babblery.com for links and information related to this podcast.